Holmes & Hops is proudly supported by Platt Insurance, your local independent insurance agency offering auto, home, life, business, and farm insurance. They also have a team of specialists that help you with insuring your brewery or winery. Platt Insurance, helping you protect your tomorrow. For more information or a quote, please call them at 330-856-6244 or visit them on the web at plattinsurance.com. Hello, everyone. Lisa Resnick here, Holmes & Hops. I am back in the podcast studio, and I am here today with Greg Wormley of the Pump House in Struthers. Hey, Greg.
Hello, hello.
So we are chilling, and it has been quite a week so far, and it's only Monday. Can you believe that?
No. That means there's just way more to go. It'll be all right.
I feel like every day has become a weekday.
It feels like it. We're at home all the time anymore.
That's exactly right. Yeah. So, Greg, not only do you have the Pump House, but I know from speaking with a couple of the other brewers locally, with Richard with Penguin City, he commented about how you were the first person he ever brewed beer with.
Yep, that was me. He wanted to, well, we've discussed it. We knew each other through band things back in the day too, but he wanted to get into brewing, just homebrewing wise, and I do this a lot. I invite people over so they're comfortable with brewing, and they're not scared, and invite them over to the shop, brew with them, let them do the work, and I'm just there for moral support in case something goes wrong.
So let's talk about the Pump House, actually. So you've been around for 20 years?
Probably over 20 years now, I think, because we took it over in 97. We had just moved over from California, and I was looking for work and ended up buying this 2 years later, and it's been ours ever since. And I've been brewing quite a bit before that. I started brewing in California.
So what started you brewing beer?
My neighbor in California. I was back then. Being nice weather all the time, we always had our doors open, and we lived right across, our doors were outside, and we lived right across the balcony from each other. So I walked by one day, and I'm like, what are you doing in there? It smells good. He goes, I'm brewing beer. And I'm like, wait, what? You can brew beer at home? And so he invited me in. We learned the process. I went into the library and got more information and started making things better with him. And then we're off and running.
That's awesome. And then how did you guys, I mean, think about it. Actually, this is very important. Think about it. Like when you started homebrewing back then in California to the technology, because you just mentioned going to the library. So I'm going to have to call you out on this. And then now like people are able to just YouTube it or whatever it may be. I mean, what are the pros and cons of doing that?
There are some cons of YouTubing stuff. You got to make sure that it's a reputable source, because sometimes there's some false brewer information on there.
I believe that.
And it might have worked for that person, but it's not the best way to go about it sometimes. So there's great websites out there. The American Homebrewers Association is one of them. That's all they do is promote that and try and get all the laws changed for it and make sure everyone's knowledgeable about brewing and safety and that kind of stuff.
Cleaning seems to be the underlining theme.
I heard that on your last podcast with the clean.
That is true.
Very true.
Joe Glista called himself a glorified janitor.
Yeah, you can't go too wrong with sanitizing stuff. If in doubt, just sanitize it again. That's all. It's a little bit of sanitizer goes a long way for a good batch.
And I hear water is super important as well.
It is. I use city water at the shop to brew because most of the kind of beers that I brew are good for that profile water that we have. A lot of UK type beers.
Oh, that's good.
So when I do switch and brew up something slightly different, maybe like a German lager or something, I do have to add some stuff to it, but nothing major.
Now, when you go to the shop, what is the experience that people can expect to happen there? And think about it. Like right now, some of us have additional time on our hands to try new ventures that we never thought that we had time for before. But we're reallocating and deciding, you know what, we need to start making time for these things more often, whether we're back to our normal grind or whatever it may be. We need to balance a little bit better than what we did before.
Sure, yeah. And come see us in there. It's funny because a lot of people that have never been in the shop before are in awe when they come in there because it's part museum, part brew shop. So they stand there and look around for quite a while and get a lot of nice comments about things in there. Kind of do collect things, so there's stuff all over the walls, and but mostly brew-related stuff or memorabilia from our brew club and that kind of stuff. But we're very mellow in teaching people. I try not to overwhelm people with scaring them away with that you need all this fancy equipment to brew.
Okay.
My system's super simple. It's very portable. I keep it that way, so when I go teach somebody, they're not scared. So that's all you need. That's all you need.
Do you like come to people's houses and help?
I have gone a couple of times. Usually I invite them over to the shop because it's easier. I have everything there as far as all the other equipment, not so much the actual brewing part of it. But I usually let them keep it there and ferment it too for a while, and then they can come bottle and pick it up. It's like a one-time thing usually. And then once they see how easy it is, then they go home and brew and they're calm.
I'm not going to lie. Brewing to me does seem, I enjoy drinking the beer, obviously, but it does seem intimidating.
I could see that, especially with all the information that's online now and all the fancy books that are out there now too. It can be kind of scary. You think it's very scientific and very, can be very hard to do. And it's not. It's very simple.
Really?
The fun part, probably the most fun part of the whole process is designing your own recipes and making your beer like you want it. So you can tweak it exactly how you want. So it'll be your personal beer.
Did you just dive in with your recipes, or did you replicate recipes for a little bit before you decided to venture out?
I started brewing stuff out of the first book that I ever bought, which was, they call him the grandfather of homebrewing, I think, something like that, Charlie Papazian. He's been in the homebrewing industry since the 70s, I believe. And his book was really relaxed, and he even says that in the beginning, like first chapter, he's like, relax, have a homebrew. And then he goes off, and then every once in a while he brings that back up. So he's really, he's like an old hippie, and he's just super fun. I've met him a few times, super nice guy. But I made sure I brewed his recipes or some of those recipes first, so I knew they were decent recipes. And then after you do a couple of those, then you're like, you know, I want a little more of this or a little less of that, and just tweak them. And then putting extra ingredients is in there lately, I'm sure you've noticed by a lot of the breweries in the area,
yes,
are endless. I mean, I got people that come in the shop that throw the craziest stuff in their batches. And 9 times out of 10, it comes out great.
There's a lot of times that I feel like they were questionable, but they thought it would taste good. So they gave it a shot and it ended up being absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
I think the last I heard was watermelon, yeah, attempting the watermelon in the beer. In my opinion, I feel like that's a combination of two perfect summer refreshers, right?
True.
Watermelon and beer. I don't understand why that wouldn't work.
No, sometimes you just have to find the right amount to put in and the right type of beer to put it in, too.
That is true. That is very true.
Watermelon is really delicate. So if you put it in something that's a big, flavorful beer already, it's going to get buried.
Now, what if you homebrew? Do you have to worry about, and I did mention this with Jason with the flight crew, do you have to worry about temperatures in your house or the energy or anything like that? Do you need to gauge it? Like, you know how if you have a wine room, you need to make sure you have your separate AC to make sure that the temperature is regulated depending on the type of wine that you have in there. Is it the same thing?
There is. There's different yeasts that will go to different temperatures too. So sometimes you can base it off of that. And there's these new yeasts out. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right. Kvik or Kvike.
Well, I'm not going to correct you because obviously I can't pronounce things.
And they ferment at really high temperatures with no off flavors.
Okay.
And they've designed ones that do lagers now too. So apparently you could brew a lager at 90 degrees, I think, with no off flavors, which if you would use a traditional lager yeast, you can have all kinds of off flavors.
Wow.
So temperature control is important.
Okay.
It's not very hard to do.
And like basically, like you could take as little space or as much space as you want.
Yeah, I've got customers from both ends of that spectrum. People that brew in a little tiny apartment who have their own brew shed in their backyard. So yeah, you can get as fancy as you want.
So starting off, what would you say like the equipment about how much of an investment would it be for somebody to purchase? I mean, again, you don't need to buy the Rolls Royce of brewing, but equipment, but starting off, about how much would people expect to
spend? At least probably between $150 to $200. And that would be for quite a bit of equipment. Maybe possibly including an ingredient too, to start. A lot of our old homebrewers that have been in with us for a long time have built a lot of their systems. Either weld themselves or know somebody that welds or, you know, has plasma cutter here or whatever. And they make all kinds of their own equipment and saves a lot of money that way. Then ingredients is super cheap. I mean, you cut the cost way down when you brew your own beer.
Oh, that's nice. Maybe that is something that maybe I should look into when it comes to that. Be a little bit more economic.
It's a little time consuming, but it's worth it.
But what did we just say?
We're home now.
Exactly. So, yeah. We can take some more time on things that we want to test out and try. And $150 isn't too much of an investment. And I feel like it's just that right price point to make sure that you're going to be a little bit more dedicated. To make sure that you're going to follow through and not just spend $150 on something.
Right. There's starter kits that start at around $72, $73. But that doesn't include ingredients or bottles. And then there's equipment kits that come with everything that you need, even a kettle. They're closer to the $200 range.
Can you homebrew and then just put it right into a keg?
Yeah, absolutely. I keg all my stuff. Most people that start out don't have all that equipment to start. So they, most of the time they start out bottling. They find that bottling is a pain and kegging is a lot easier. And then they round up equipment and start kegging. And yeah, it's way simpler when you keg. Just need a place to store it. That's all. So if you have a kegerator or an old fridge or something, it's fine.
So you mentioned before, like your relationship with homebrewers. So about how many homebrewers do we have in this area? Do you know?
Not like exact wise. I know how many emails and stuff we send out to people, but I don't see all those people all the time. And some of them are seasonal as well.
Okay.
I would say there's probably around 200 that we deal with on a pretty routine basis throughout the year.
Now, do a lot of them, I know, like for instance, Purple Cat typically has their fundraiser.
That we're a big part of that. Two
yes,
of those.
A very huge part of both of those. An essential part of both of those. And I mean, obviously COVID has impacted, but I do know there is one fundraiser for the homebrewers, right? To be able to draw some money in for the Purple Cat.
Yeah, we were kind of in with the one they had at Westside Bowl as
yes.
well. And that did really well. And I hope they do something similar to that. But homebrewing-wise, we are doing a homebrew competition with Noble Creature.
Oh my goodness. And that's awesome.
All the entry money is going to go to Purple Cat. And it's $10 entry fee, which is nothing. And
that's not
I think
bad.
You need about 32 ounces of beer to enter. There's information online for it. If you go to Noble Creatures or Pump House's Facebook page, there's information for it. But the winner will get to go brew at Noble Creature. With Ira and possibly me. It wasn't in the thing, but I'm going to make myself there.
I would do it too. I'll come and watch and then I'll taste.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think it's going to be on tap there when they're allowed to open, or at least maybe be packaged and you'll be able to get it to go. But hopefully by then you'll be able to go back inside and get it on tap.
Oh, I hope so too. I truly do. And then actually, speaking of opening and everything, how, like Pump House, you're open.
Yep. Yeah, we were allowed to stay open during the whole thing because we sell yeast and grain. So it's food and agriculture. I made sure I checked into it before all that so I didn't have anybody come shut me down. But
yes.
In Ohio, we were allowed to stay open. So we just did curb service only. You had a phone in your order. I throw the mask on, run it out to your car. And I made it super simple. But now we're open inside and we're doing the mask thing too, just to be safe.
Of course. Why not? Let's try everything that we can, right?
Yeah.
Anything to slow this thing down. But with that, have you guys been impacted a lot or do you see more people coming in?
When we were first locked down, we definitely saw more people. And that's happened in the past when there was like a recession or something too.
Okay.
We'd see more people at home trying to save money and do things on their own.
But not miss out on our beer.
No, alcohol sales always go up during stuff like that. So yeah, there was a lot of people that had came in that haven't come in a while. They were like, "Oh, I'm going to be home, so I'm going to get my equipment out and brew some batches." So then they realized how much fun they were having and forgot about it and started brewing more regularly. But it's kind of hard to gauge it right now because summer's always our slow time.
Okay.
So I'm not sure if that's affecting it or not, but summer we do get pretty slow.
Why do you think that is?
Everyone's out drinking beer and cutting grass and swimming.
That is true.
Then when they run out, they brew a batch.
And then actually, speaking of beer, you brought some beer with us.
I brought two today. One that I brewed with Modern Methods. It is a nut brown that was on tap out there for quite a while. It was called Greg's Nut Brown.
Okay.
Pretty simple. I didn't name it. They did. And then I brought a chocolate coconut porter.
Oh, wow.
Which, if you ever had Oscar Blues Death by Coconut?
I have not. And I love coconut. That's
one of my... clone of that. You're the one of the first people that I have given this to in the last 2 weeks that did not say, "I hate coconut."
Oh, no. I love coconut. That's one of my favorite flavors.
It's great beer. It came about by, we would stop at Vintage a lot before we would go play hockey at the Ice Zone with a bunch of, we like to call it the older guys league.
It's so not, wait a sec, yeah. You play hockey, you play hockey, you brew, you have your own store.
I do.
And you're a musician.
And that, I've always been a musician since like the fifth grade, I think.
What do you play?
Drums mostly.
Okay.
That's what I was brought up playing, but I've taught myself how to play guitar and a little bit of piano, but yeah.
Well, before you leave here, you'll have to see my husband's collection. Huh? There you go. We even have a canjo.
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, you'll see. It's a SpaghettiOs canjo.
Makes more sense now. We had access to a Komodophone once that we used in our band. It was a guitar made out of a toilet seat.
No,
and you opened the lid to play it. And one of our drummer at that time, his father-in-law had it and let us borrow it for about a year. So it was a big hit for a year.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. That would be super cool. People are very creative. And it goes to show you can make music out of anything.
Yeah, pretty much. I agree with that.
So on your way, hockey...
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry I interrupted.
That's right. I get sidetracked very easily. I'm like a dog and a squirrel. We would stop at Vintage or Casual Pint, place like that, and have a few beers. And most of the guys we played with weren't craft beer people. So it was kind of educating them a little bit, letting them pick what they liked, not forcing anything on them. And a couple of them picked up this Oscar Blues Death by Coconut, and which kind of surprised me because I wasn't expecting them to be chocolate coconut beer fans. And then they... shown some interest later on that they wanted to learn how to brew. So we had a day over at the shop, about four or five of us from the team. And I had found that recipe, a clone recipe of it. I said, "Let's make that." They were all excited. So we made it, came out awesome. And this is the second version of it. Second batch of it, I should say, not version.
How many times do you replicate the same recipe?
Not as often as some people think. I do have some go-tos. Like one of my first favorite import beers was Newcastle Brown. It's just a beer to me that had a lot of flavor at the time. We're talking like 80s period when there wasn't much available for us import-wise or craft beer-wise. And so I brew that a lot. I brew a clone of that. My wife likes a lot of stouts, and so do I, but I brew a lot of stouts for her. Coffee stout.
Oh, coffee stouts are really good. Does she like the chocolate ones?
She does, yeah. She loves just plain chocolate stouts, too, like Young's Double Chocolate. I grew a clone of that. Years ago, there was not many clone books, if any, clone books out there. Now there's hundreds of clone recipes. And there was two beers she really liked, and there was no recipes for them. One was Young's Double Chocolate, and one was by a brewery called Red Hook, which I think they're still around. They were in Seattle, and then they opened on the East Coast somewhere.
Oh.
In New Hampshire, Vermont, somewhere over in that way. And they made this double black stout, which was a coffee stout that they brewed with Starbucks house blend, being that they're from Seattle originally, way before Starbucks all blew up and is everywhere now.
Yes, everywhere.
So when she was pregnant, she was craving coffee stout, and obviously she wasn't going to have any when she was pregnant, even though the English always used to do that.
Well, you know, and I will say, at least when I had my kids, the doctors then said it was okay to have a little bit.
Sure. One of the old stout beers that used to be on a lot of menus was called Nourishing Stout, and they would give it to kids. It was a low alcohol beer, but it had a lot of product in it that was good for you.
Yep.
And the yeast isn't good for you in it as well. So anyways, I tried to clone this recipe, just going by what information I could either get from their website or on the side of the bottle at the time. And I went to the store and bought Starbucks coffee, brewed this batch, put it in a keg, aged it until she had the baby. And then I go, here's your keg. Celebrate. And
you're
it came out great.
A phenomenal husband. That is awesome.
And we brewed that beer numerous times because it did come out good.
You were giving push gifts before push gifts became popular.
It was an incentive, I guess.
That is awesome. That is phenomenal that you did that, because that took a lot of time too, right?
It did, yeah.
So can we try the one that you brought, the coconut one?
Sure. It's in the Crooked Tongue Growler. Shout out to Crooked Tongue.
That's right. I need to get them on here.
Yeah, I know them guys. Cody, I think, is in Florida, I believe. Would you like to pour it?
Or... Oh, sure.
It's up to you. I'll let you go if you want. That way you can pour as much as you want.
Oh, no, there's coconut. So.
And you can have as much as you want. We'll make more.
You're going to have me at the shop when you're showing someone else how to do it, so then I could watch how it happens.
Absolutely. Yeah, we do that as well.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you like it.
Oh, I do. It's delicious.
It's very,
for everyone.
It's very,
and you cannot buy this anywhere.
It's very balanced. A little hint of like roasty smoky in the background for the porter part of it, but coconut up front, little chocolate in the middle, and it's bitter chocolate, so it's not sweet.
Now, so how do you go about with the descriptions and everything with the, do you have to take a class of like the sommelier, you know, how they like taste with the different regions?
I just call it like I really feel it. I went and judged wine a couple of times, and I'm not certified to judge beer or wine really, but I've been around it enough. I kind of know what to look for, and I just try and be honest. And there was one time at a homemade wine competition, I think it was at the Canfield Fair, maybe. And the first taste I tasted of this wine, I tasted wet cabbage.
Oh.
And the serious wine judge next to me looked at me and like tilted his head. And he's like, you don't know what you're talking about. I passed it down to him. He tasted it. He goes, you're right. I'm like, what? The first thing that pops into my head is when I blurt out.
How do you get the wet cabbage flavor in your wine?
Oh, that was definitely not something that was supposed to be in there. I'm not sure. I don't know if it was something not sanitized or...
See, yeah, there you go. The cleaning, yeah, right?
And like I said, cleaning is very easy. The sanitizers that are out there are so simple to use. And the contact time is really short on them, so it's not like... As a matter of fact, some of the sanitizers were out of stock for a while because people were making sanitizers with them.
Oh, no way.
To sanitize your hands and stuff. Well,
there you go. Have you ever tried to make wine?
Yeah, I make a lot of wine.
Oh,
I would have
wow.
brought you a bottle of wine, but I didn't know you were into that as oh. well. So we'll get you one later.
I drink pretty much anything. No. I do stay away from hard alcohol, but I do love my beer and my wine.
Yeah, we make wine quite a bit. Make some fruit wines and some heavier reds. Occasional white. I did make a chocolate raspberry port.
Ooh.
That came out phenomenal. And I slowly give that away because there's not a lot of it.
Yes.
But if I know you appreciate it, you can have some.
I love it. So we also touched base on the fact that you do have a really good relationship with our local brewers here. The more commercial ones.
Yeah. Most of them started out as home brewers, and the majority of them were customers of mine. Some were not from around this area and possibly had homebrew shops closer to them, which we support. Go to your local homebrew shop. Doesn't matter where it is. Go to them. Yeah, but that's how we became friends originally. And then once they all started opening, the next thing you know, they're inviting me to go brew with them. So I brewed at Birdfish, I brewed at Modern Methods, I brewed at Noble Creatures.
Any good stories with any of them?
You caught me off guard on that one because I have to make sure it's not an incriminating story.
Oh, it's okay. It could be incriminating.
No, it's all, for the most part, pretty good. I don't remember anything. Yeah, nothing out of the way. It might, something might pop up later. I don't know. We'll see. I'll have to think about it. Toss it around for a while.
I mean, what's your thoughts about seeing them become so popular in our area where we are so Miller Lite, Bud Light, Coors Light inundated to see the surgence of flavor loving beer drinkers? Yeah, really?
I was surprised at that at first because I didn't think, like you said, this area was light beer type drinkers and not spend a lot of money on beer either. People would rather run out and buy a 30 pack of Genesee.
True.
For $8.99 or whatever, which is fine if that's what you like to drink. So I was surprised to see that transition of people now accepting the fact that beers are going to be between $4 and $8.
Yes.
If not, sometimes more, but on a steady. But you're getting more for what you pay for. It's definitely more flavor. It's locally made. So there's a lot of love that goes into those beers. You know, it's nice to see.
There is love, and it is cool because when you get the opportunity to go to these places and have that one-on-one experience with the brewery, like you can't go into a Budweiser and hang out. You just can't.
Nope, they just shovel you right through. Hair's not done. Go to the tasting room.
There's actually, so when we typically like to go to Vermont every summer. I'm not a snowbird or a skier, so hiking up the mountains are much more of my thing than skiing down the mountain. But there's Harpoon that's out there that is one of our typical stops I'll go to. There's, you can kayak down the river, Connecticut River, ironically, and when you're there. But it is interesting to see and look through the window glass and everything about how the systems. It's like even like the Ben and Jerry's. You get to go to the Ben and Jerry's. It's kind of the same deal. Like you see the system and like how everything is like Laverne and Shirley. Like
what, shots.
Yes. But when you go to our local brewers, which it's really cool to like see the product and the variations and everything, meet with the brewers and look through and see what they're doing on there. And it's just phenomenal.
And a lot of that equipment too, from when they first started out, was just Frankenstein together, larger homebrew equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to Adam at Modern Methods. He'll tell you that. Ira and Noble Creatures tell you the same thing. They build a lot of their equipment. And slowly as, you know, things work better for them, they can buy some fancier, bigger equipment too. They've been doing that, both of them, so.
Which has been great to see that they've been all expanding what they have. But even with their expansion, it's still like, even though they're bringing in this new equipment, they're still having to assemble it, make sure it works and everything that goes along with it. It's the bottling, the canning, all the stuff that comes into play, especially because they've had to readjust their business models from being inside to distribution, which is a whole other level for craft beer, in which they're pushing things out further and more than what they probably had in their plan at this time.
Yeah, because a lot of them were just pushing kegs to restaurants and places, and now they're packaging more in smaller containers and trying to sell more to the public as well, being that you can't come inside and hang out.
That's right. You had Modern Methods that was delivering it to you.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much more phenomenal you can get.
Delivered right to your door.
I mean, that was the best. I was like, when they had it just certain days for certain areas, I was like, I don't care.
I believe it was in the Darling Express too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Driving around in the van.
It was awesome. It was the greatest delivery I've ever received.
So far, it seems like all the breweries in the area are doing fairly well through this. Paladin, Biker, all of them. They seem to be pulling through, and I hope they do. We try and support them as much as we can. Can't go there all the time. I try and make the rounds and pick up something here and there from each one. And they all return the favor by sending people to us. So it works both ways.
It does work both ways. And the significance of them in our communities and you in our community is extremely important. and we want to make sure our local strength continues on and that we're constantly out there supporting. I mean, really. I mean,
yeah, this is a working class area, so people like that hands-on thing and having something that's made locally, like you talked about Penguin City, that was a great idea because he wanted to make a beer that was kind of in between your standard big brewery type beer and some craft beer, so he could possibly sway some of them over to that side, and it worked.
What I love about the Penguin City beer is, well, obviously ABV level for me is significant. So it is like if there's a game day or I'm just hanging with my friends for an extended period of time, I know that I'm able to handle my Penguin City beer.
That sounds exactly like me. Most of the stuff I brew is between 3.5 and 5% at the most.
That's perfect.
I like to partake throughout the day.
Exactly. And throwing me a 9%.
That's okay for sitting around a fire at night or something.
Exactly.
Or from camping maybe, but yeah, not a couple of those and it's not going to be fun anymore.
No, it's not. And I'm very excited that they have Penguin City Light.
Yeah, I haven't tried it yet. I've seen it.
It's really good.
Seen the new YSU can. It was on Facebook, I think. Somebody designed it with the big YSUY on there.
Yep.
Penguin City Light on it.
It's great. And it's great to see, like, they support the craft beers. And I know Rich is into brewing craft beer himself and varying off there. But he also, they have their main focus.
Right. Yeah, they always said his plan was to only have a real small catalog of beers. And they've only strayed a little bit from that. Going back to the home brewing and local breweries wise, Biker Brewing Company just did a brew school or beer school.
They did. I got to sneak in on it.
Did you? You didn't go to my class. I taught the second class.
Did you really?
I did. And I brought in all the ingredients, like the grain and hops and everything, and let everyone taste
it. I came in right at the end when they were bottling.
All right.
So I came in at the best part because then I got some.
And I thought it was cool how they went about it, like doing the separate classes and everyone got to take or would get to take home beer with the fee that they paid or whatever, which was just really low.
The fee was super low. They were able to
$50 or $60, I think. You got two cases of beer.
I was about to say they were able to take two cases of beer. Like the entire and how long was the course?
I think it was 3 or 4 weeks.
I mean, I feel like that's a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah. I was promoting it during this. They said they could only take 10 people anyways. So it filled up to 10 and I think only a couple dropped out. So they could have filled them spots, but they didn't have time. But still, I mean, everyone that was in it had a great time, and I had fun teaching it. We had a great time. And like I said, I brought a bunch of grain for them to taste and described them all. So I was trying to get them to figure out what they wanted to put in their beer by taste and smell. And then the next week, they designed their beer and came up with that red.
So like with the hops, because you can pop a hop that is a fresh right off the vine in your mouth. I wouldn't suggest popping in your mouth
popcorn,
but it is a little bitter. But can you do that with the grain as well to taste the variations?
I got a lot of customers that come in that actually taste grain before they use it. They might not even know what they're looking for as far as grain-wise, and they'll start tasting and smelling, and they'll hit on something like, that's what I'm looking for in my beer. So I always push that.
That's awesome. I never even thought about tasting the grain portion of it.
Well, it tastes good. The regular barley tastes like real malty, so it's nice and kind of sweet. And then there's all kinds of other. There's honey malt. There is coffee malt that tastes like coffee pretty much. There is every malt you can think of nowadays. And they're all for mostly flavor, color, head retention, that kind of stuff.
Where do you pull the supply, like the grain and the barley?
We do get some local. There is some grain coming out of New Waterford, which is Yarian malt. I'm pretty sure Birdfish use a lot of their malt.
Okay.
They're trying to get some to Noble Creature, but Ira doesn't have a grain mill, so he needs pre-crushed malt, and I'm pretty sure Sam at Yarian is hooked up with a grain mill. So you might start seeing that grain down there. But outside of that, our grain comes from all over the world. to our wholesalers, which we have one in Kent, one in Pittsburgh, and then there's one on the West Coast as well. But so they all, we get most of our stuff from the one in Kent because it's close and I can go pick up my order. That's what I did today. I ran up there and picked up the order. And then all the other ones we just have delivered. But they all have their own little specialty things, so that's why we use them all.
So what are the your favorite beers you've ever brewed?
Favorite beers? Oh, the one we're trying right now is one. We've been really hitting that keg pretty hard. The coffee stout that I talked about earlier that I designed, Young's Double Chocolate Clone that we did years ago. I got a nice quick story about that. A homebrewer friend of mine at the time, we both had gotten nitrogen systems for our home systems for Christmas. It was both on our Christmas list. And we decided, well, we want to try and clone Young's Double Chocolate. So I went to Young's website at the time, and they listed all the ingredients in all their beers. They just didn't tell you how much.
Okay.
So we did have a computer program at the time. It was on floppy disks. That's how long ago it
was. Wow. That was a throwback.
The whole program came on 4 floppy disks. That's how many you had to load into it. And then we kind of played around with it and put all the numbers in and got the color right and brewed it. And it came out amazing because we had no idea how to add the chocolate at the time. There was no chocolate beers in homebrewing around here, at least. And only that one on the market that I know of. And years later, I got a call from him. He got a job brewing at Penn Brewing Company for quite a few years and worked his way up to head brewer down there. And I got a call from him. He was out at the Great American Beer Fest. And he goes, remember that recipe that we did years ago? It's a homebrew recipe we designed it, me and you. I go, yeah. He goes, well, I ramped that up, and that's the beer that we have at Penn that was called Liquid Love or something like that. It had some Valentine's-type name to it. And I think it was originally released around Valentine's Day. Because I want to let you know that I used that recipe pretty much and put, you know, ramped it up to our system, and it just won gold at the GABF.
Oh, wow.
So I go, where's my medal?
Yeah. Do you get to share it 50%?
Yeah, I should have gone. He's
living, custody?
Yeah, he moved away just, I forget where, Portugal?
Oh, wow.
And he's brewing in Portugal now.
Is he really?
He is.
How popular is brewing around the world? Like, I know you'll go over to Europe, and you do have a lot of, I think Eastern Europe pretty much sticks with just a couple of selections, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, usually high gravity stuff, too.
Yes.
I think the craft thing's really grown in the UK, for sure.
Definitely the UK.
With him in Portugal, he's brewing at a craft brewery, and I was surprised at that. I mean, I didn't know of anything to come out of there, but like that type of beer, but it's nice to see. I think even Mexico's got a bunch now.
I think it was the United Kingdom that did the original study about craft breweries and its impact on residential real estate and how they increase the value of the homes because it just increases the desirability of the area.
I did read that somewhere.
Yes. And I think that was the origination of where they started doing the studies behind it. There's been no connection with commercial real estate. However, I will say once you have the desirability, I mean, there's definitely a connected dot. It might not be as strong right now in the stats as you'll see in residential to the breweries, but 100%, if you become a desirable location, then 100% commercial real estate is going to want to be there, and therefore those rates also go up.
But sure. Makes sense.
It does. I mean, it just, you know, I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night, so.
Oh, of course. So you're a doctor too?
I am. A doctor of what? I do not know. But so any other favorite beers?
That is another good question. I did make, going back to the Purple Cat thing, when they first started Beer, Wine, and Chocolate.
Yes.
That's what it was called. It was Beer, Wine, and Chocolate. Then they added hot peppers to it, like maybe the second or third year, I think. And so I'm like, I want to make a beer that has all that in there, except for the wine, obviously, so I brought separate wine. But so I made a hot pepper chocolate mild, an English mild beer, and took it there. And it was, I never brewed a hot pepper beer, so I was kind of afraid to like how much heat to throw in there. So I used, it was called an Amazon pepper, I think, at the time. And it came out great, and it actually won. I think it won first or second place.
Hey. That year.
So that was one that I brewed numerous times. And one of my friends from the Oaks, which always drank like Corona and Pabst and a couple other those beers like that. And he worked for a beer distributor. He loved that beer. And I couldn't figure out why, because it's so out of his range of beers. He loved it so much that they won a gift certificate, I think at Beer, Wine, and Chocolate.
Oh.
And they gave it to me and said, would you brew me that beer?
Oh, wow.
I said, if you come over and help me, I'll bring you that beer. So I brewed it for him. They took the keg to the Outer Banks, and they took a picture of him in the jacuzzi with the keg right behind him and his little spigot and his glass. And then they put an Outer Banks sticker on it for me. They tagged the keg when they brought it back. And he has since passed away, unfortunately, but it's a great memory.
That is a really good memory.
It was Cliffy. And they named the beer that I brewed with Crooked Tongue, the hot pepper beer that we brewed over there. I think they named it Here's the Cliffy.
Oh, that's cool. So you have, like, so the one that you brewed with Crooked Tongue, did that include chocolate?
It did, yeah.
So you did replicate it.
It was very close. Yeah, we couldn't find those peppers anymore. And that day I ran around all of Newcastle trying to find something else to use. We ended up using something from Cody's secret stash of peppers in his back room box. So it was a little hotter than we expected, but it's still quite good.
I do. Like, Biker Brew House has the habanero.
Yeah.
And and Larry was mentioning how this last batch was a little bit
it's hot. A hard one because the peppers aren't always the same.
No, they're not.
Every year they're different. I know that from growing them. And yeah, so that's a hard thing to gauge.
But I love the heat. So I was like, I think it's awesome. I'm like, bring on the spice.
It makes it like a seasonal beer that way. Like, what is it? Great Lakes that makes the Christmas ale, and it's never the same. They always change something up in it. It's kind of like that. So with the heat, you never know. Could be really mild one year. Could be super hot the next year.
That's very, very true. So what are some of your other favorite breweries outside of our local area?
Woolly Pig, which is one over in the Amish area, like Coshocton area.
Okay.
Wonderful brewery that brews a lot of traditional German type beers and some Belgian type things. Plus they have IPA and that kind of stuff too, to please the IPA masses, which is, it's okay. But yeah, we stumbled upon them. We went and took a little trip over there just for the weekend and was amazed by their beers. And I found out that the brewer from there went and studied in Germany, I think, and learned a lot of that stuff. So their beers are really good, clean, very flavorful. I'm trying to think of some of the other places we go to. It's been so long because we haven't
gone anywhere.
Yeah, as far as that one.
I heard that there is a brewery up in Geneva.
The Geneva on the Lake Brewing? Is it called
I think it's, I don't know, but supposedly I'm going to be testing it out this weekend. So.
Well, you'll have to let me know because when I was there a year or two ago, it wasn't open yet or whatever.
No, it's a recent. So
Sign was there, but they weren't open yet.
Nice little mix because typically, I mean, you're inundated with delicious wine there.
Yeah.
I do like their wine. But it's nice to be able to pop into a brewery now up there, which is pretty neat.
That just doesn't sell just Budweiser or stuff like that.
I know. I know. It's just really neat. Or we could go to, they also have their distillery up there too, which is really good as well.
Yeah, I have to try that out. I've never heard of that. You were enlightening me on that.
It's pretty good. Next time I'm there, actually, I'll bring you back some of their bourbon whiskey.
I'll trade you some chocolate raspberry port.
Done. That is a perfect deal. So how did you get to go back to California?
How often do I get to go
and
back?
What made you come here from California?
Well, I originally am from here.
Okay.
Me and my wife both. And I moved there first, was before we were married. So I didn't want to seem weird, like, no, we were married and I moved out. No, I don't know why I said that. I always wanted to go there. We used to take trips when I was a kid. My dad would load us up in the van and drive cross country to California.
Oh, that's awesome.
We'd zigzag all the way, take 2 weeks and do all kinds of stuff. And I remember as a kid, we always got to pick things out of the phone book to do or travel guide. So each day we had our own thing. I always picked skateboard parks. My brother always picked military museums for some reason. I don't know why.
what does your brother do now?
He works at YSU. He's involved in like the all the computer, like the feed, all that stuff. I forget what his technical term is for his job, but he's like a fancy AV guy.
There you go.
That's what I always called him. but yeah, so anyways, I, you know, after all them trips, it was after I went to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh for photography. You see how far that got me. They gave me a job in California, so that did help me out. But I was at home working for my dad at our plumbing shop, which is family owned for many, many years. And I got a call from my old roommate at college saying, I need a roommate. And I'm like, where are you at? He goes, California. And I'm like, can I? So I asked my mom, I go, what do you think if I go out there for a while and check it out? She goes, go, you always wanted to go there. They got me a plane ticket. She sent me out for like 2 weeks, traveled around, didn't have a car. So I borrowed his truck every once in a while and would check out some job stuff, mostly just having fun because I knew I was going to be there for 2 weeks.
Yes.
Tried to fit That's in a fair. Bunch of stuff, but it was cool. And then I flew back home and told my mom, I go, I think I'm going back. She says, all right. So they helped us and helped me move. And I moved in with him and I ended up getting a job at a major photography lab thing.
Oh, wow.
Out there, and it was fun. And then my wife came out shortly after, about a year or less. Like I said before, just before we married.
She came out?
She did. And then we moved to our own apartment because there was four or five of us living
that's how that works.
Studio apartment. And you know that never goes good. So we branched off and got our own apartment in Santa Ana. And then we stayed there for about 10 years. And there was just... It was getting crazy out there, and cost of living is crazy high.
It is extraordinarily high.
And we wanted a house, and the house out there would have taken us a lot more. And there was a house in here, and our family open here, plus all our families were still here. So we decided to move back and have a family and be around family. We did go back 2 years ago and got to spend 2 weeks there. And I still have a lot of friends and stuff out there. So we stayed with friends for most of them 2 weeks and went to tons of breweries. And right down the street from their house was, you ever been to a Total Wine?
Yes, I have.
I love those places.
They are pretty cool.
They have local sections for the beer when you go in there. And that's what I look for. When I go in, I'm looking for the local things. And so I usually load up the trunk with a few boxes of stuff to take back to the hotel or wherever you go for the week. And I took all those back to their house and we shared them throughout the 2 weeks we were there.
It's perfect. Total Wine is really cool. One of my friends, her husband owned one in Virginia. And it was the same thing. They had this massive local section.
And it's a big store, too.
It's huge.
It's wine and beer and liquor, too.
It's almost overwhelming.
It is.
So
the first time we were in, we went up and down every road just to see what they had.
See, I typically just find someone and I say, okay, where is this? What do you recommend? I mean, that's part of the reason why I love Vintage Estate so much is that you could just go in there and say, this is what I'm thinking, my flavors or whatever. Actually, even during the beginning of the pandemic, when everything was shut down, I would call Vintage Estates up and say, this is my budget. I would like 6 bottles of wine, maybe 7, maybe to get me through the week. I said 7, but I would like 7 bottles of wine. This is my budget. You pick. This is like, I want a cab. Like you pick whatever it is out of that range. I trust you. You know more than I do.
Is it Mark that was picking them up?
It was Mark.
He is their wine guy.
He did a fabulous job. He really did.
He's still homebrew with us. He keeps flirting with getting back into homebrewing every time I see him. I got to start brewing again. You know where to find me. Come on over.
Exactly. So speaking of where to find you, where is Pump House located for all those out there who may be venturing into homebrewing?
Yes, it's in beautiful Struthers, Ohio, right next to the Elmton. It is 336 Elm Street, Struthers, Ohio.
See, that's easy to remember.
Yeah, most people know where the Elmton is. There are people that are from around this area know where it is. So when they call, I go, you know where the Elmton is? Yeah. We're right next to it.
Then there they go. They're like, oh, we'll be there. And what are your store hours?
That's a little tricky. Okay. They are steady, but I do take a lunch break in the middle because I'm the only one there. I do need that break to either just go home and relax for a little bit or to run errands. That break started out when my daughter was little and I'd have to go pick her up from school. So I just kept that break every. So it's Tuesday through Friday, 9 to 6. Lunch break from 1:30 to 2:30.
Fair.
And Saturday, 9 to 2.
Not bad. Not bad at all. And I do think that there's nothing wrong with the siesta, as you know.
That's one of the things I miss from California. Not only siestas, Mexican food.
Oh, yes.
True Mexican food.
But also their fish.
There are some good ones around here, but...
There's good fish out there.
Such a variety of...
Everything.
Ethnic foods in Southern California that you could eat probably from a different country for a month.
I like our food here is absolutely fabulous. I love it.
We're spoiled in this area.
We are very spoiled. But I will say the variety of food that you will find in the larger cities in California. So I was born in San Mateo.
All right.
Yes. So raised here in Boardman, but I was born in San Mateo. I used to say that because you know how it's like everybody says once you're here, you can never get out. You always come back. I used to say because I was born elsewhere, I can go and I won't come back, but here I am.
There are lots of things I miss from there. Usually weather-wise.
Yes.
And things to do. There's like an endless, not right at the moment, obviously, but normally, if you're bored, grab a LA Weekly or, you know, a BAM magazine, and there's something going on somewhere.
There definitely is. Now, and again,
go to the beach.
In everyone's defense, it's very difficult to have a lot going on right now because we're so limited in what we can do. True.
There's been a lot of things canceled. And where else could you go? We've done it. Skiing in the morning to the afternoon, snow skiing, and to the beach for the second part of the day.
That is true. And the beaches are absolutely gorgeous. My mom used to always attest to the fact of the ocean of the West Coast being so much more healing than that of the East.
The only thing I don't like about it is the seaweed.
Oh.
It's way more my seaweed.
It's supposed to be good for you.
It is, but when it touches you, it like freaks you out when you're in the water.
That's my issue with lake water and swimming in lake water and touching the ground. I can't do it.
I usually wear shoes when I go in lakes. I wear like old Converse or whatever because I don't like that clay, squishy.
I feel like that's fair because I agree with you completely. Well, thank you so much for coming by and being on here. And is that there's anything that you want to promote or repeat to everyone to be sure besides coming to the Pump House?
Absolutely. If you're least bit interested in homebrewing or just want to stop by and ask questions or call and ask questions, that's fine. If you're already a homebrewer, and I would definitely recommend getting into the homebrew competition at Noble Creature. Where else are you going to have your beer on tap if you win? So that's a great incentive.
It is great.
Plus the money goes to Purple Cat, our true near and dear friends to us. All the great clients from there. I work there part-time every once in a while. I volunteer stuff for them. And that whole crew from them are hearts of gold, all of them.
That is very, very true.
And they're fun to be around. I've done numerous trips for them.
Yes,
I can tell stories about them.
All right.
Not on the air.
Oh, darn. I was like, hey, got something to say about
Jimmy?
That'll
be another show. As a matter of fact, I probably do. And some clients as well.
That's awesome. That'll be another time for sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, cheers. Thank you.
You're welcome.